So, in this talk, first I want to just briefly kind of review the recent progress on trapped ion quantum computation, both from the experimental side and the theoretic side. And at the end of the talk, we'll also take a few minutes to briefly introduce the efforts at Tsinghua University to build this Center for Quantum Information. So I guess for this, the first few slides are actually about motivation. And I guess for this audience, we actually don't need this kind of motivation. We just skip that. And we all knew that quantum computers can solve some problems which is believed to be beyond the capability of classical computers. And now the major problems actually is how to build this computer, how to build a quantum computer. To build a quantum computer, you have several basic requirements. First, you need to have a scalable system of qubits. You need these qubits well separated. They have a long coherence times. And they need to be scalable. Scalable means, first, the number of qubits shouldn't be limited. And second, if you want to do quantum gates on this kind of stuff, the difficulty of this gate shouldn't increase when you increase the number of qubits. And also, you want good isolation of these qubits, so it has a long coherence times. And at the same time, you need to have a pretty precise control so that you can get a high fidelity quantum gate. The fidelity of the gates need to fulfill this so-called error threshold theorem. You need to push that beyond the error threshold. And finally, you need to have some controllable interaction between the qubits. This is required for any quantum gates. And these requirements is it's not easy to achieve in physical systems. Actually, some of the requirements sound to be contradictory to each other. You know, you need a good isolation, and at the same time, you need to have a controllable interaction. And so far, there are a number of physical systems which have been considered for implementation of quantum computation. This includes both atomic optic systems and some solid state systems. For atomic optic systems, this includes trapped ions, for instance, neutral atoms, and photons. And for solid states, there are quantum dots, superconducting qubits, and nuclear spins in some ME centers or in some other systems. So all these systems, there are big efforts on all these systems in the whole world. There are many experimental groups there. And in this talk, I want to focus on one particular system, these trapped ions. And we know these trapped ions is actually one of the leading systems considered for implementation of quantum computing. And we want to review some of the recent progress there. For the trapped ion systems, it still keeps the record in terms of the number of qubits for quantum entanglement, for quantum computing. So far, we know 14, for the published result, 14 ions have been entangled. And the recent ones, actually, we have, there are more than 16 ions have been put in the entangled state. That's by far the largest for any experimental system. And one also has demonstrated all the basic quantum gates for these systems. The gate precision has been pushed beyond about 99%, which is pretty close to the error threshold already. So the trapped ions, this is the kind of basic setup for trapped ions. It's kind of a working horse for almost all these experiments. It's called linear power trap. You just have several segments, and you put the ions along the center of these traps. It's arranged along this linear shape. So that basically works pretty well. And now what's the major problems here? What's the difficulty here? This is typically one of the cartoon picture usually shown by David Wynand. We know that David Wynand is one of the leading figures in this field. And the main difficulty is scalability, how to increase the number of ions here. We cannot put too many ions in this trap. How to overcome this problem, several ideas have been suggested. This is one of the ideas proposed a decade ago is by so-called kind of ion shortening. You need to use a much more complicated traps, and the ions need to be moved around in these traps so that you can do quantum gates on these systems. And for this approach, the major difficulty is to build this kind of complicated ion traps. You can see this. This is a kind of cartoon picture, but it needs many segments of the ions. And it's difficult to do that. This is kind of one of the experimental picture. This only have a few segments of ions, but you can see the electrons here gets very complicated already. It's very hard to make this kind of connection. And in recent years, there are many developments, many investment in this direction. They develop some integration technology to just fabricate these kind of traps. This is from the wireless group, so-called chip traps. There are big efforts and big money invested in this direction. But on the other hand, the experimental progress is actually pretty slow. If you count the number of qubits there, the number of qubits actually is still, in terms of number of qubits, we still have the largest number in the linear power trap in the trap we considered before. For these traps, so far we have maybe 4 ions there. So why it's so difficult? Just because to get this, to fabricate this kind of stuff is a very difficult thing. We need to still many experimental efforts. So in this talk, I want to show some kind of different approach. As a theorist, we want to suggest more models for people to consider. And this is one of the ideas to overcome these problems, how to scale up the number of ions. And this is a combination of two ideas. First, we want to try to use quantum network approach to increase the number of qubits. And in particular, for any quantum network, you need to couple this so-called memory qubits to photons. The photons need to take information around. And in particular, we consider here so-called probabilistic photon coupling. This significantly simplifies your experimental requirements. And the second idea here, we try to push the number of ions in a single trap as many as possible. So we try to increase the number of ions there. And there are some different ideas, using transfer photon modes and also using unharmonic ion traps. And later we will show why we need to do that and what's the experimental progress in that direction. And many of the works here are actually done in collaboration with Chris Morris experimental group. These ideas actually has a kind of bear fruit in some of the in the current experimental implementation. We know now the in United States we have a very big teams to realize trapped ion quantum computation. It's called the MUSIC teams, which stands for Modular Universal Scalable Ion Trap Quantum Computer. It's a good name for this. But they put a big investment in this direction just to realize this kind of approach. So what's the basic idea? The basic idea, first we need to, you know, if we cannot put too many ions in a single trap, basically we need to collect ions in different trap together. This is like a classical network. If you cannot put too many bits in one computer, you may want to just connect all these computers together to do some cluster computation. Here, the idea is similar. If you have ions in different traps, first you want to connect them together. And for quantum information, to connect them together means you need to generate the entanglement. So to get entanglement between these different ion traps. And the basic idea here is normally if you want to get entanglement between ions, and if they are remote, you need to use photons to assist the interaction. You need to have strong coupling between ions and photons. That's actually a different job, different task. If you ask an experimentalist how to get strong coupling between ions and photons, they normally tell you you need to put ions in a strong coupling cavity, and everything needs to be perfect to get a so-called strong coupling region. And many people tried that over many years, but actually so far it has not been realized yet because ion trap has the requirement for ion trap has some contradiction with the requirement for high Q cavity. It's very hard to integrate these two things together. So here we will consider a different idea. We don't use any cavity. Instead, we use some probabilistic coupling. The basic idea actually is similar to one of our schemes proposed a decade ago. It's for the atomic samples. Of course, there are many groups working on atomic samples, but here we use we extend this idea to the trapped ion systems. There are some differences here. For atomic samples, of course, there are many body systems. We use many atom interference effects. For trapped ions, we don't have that, but still we can do something similar here. So what's the basic idea? The basic idea is actually pretty simple to explain. So you have trapped ions. Ions is like atoms with some kind of neighbor structure. This is a typical neighbor structure. And you pick up two neighbors in the ground state, and you use that to represent a qubit. We call spin up, spin down, or you call it 0, 1, that's your qubit. And how to get entanglement between these ions and a photon? That's the first step if you want to generate some entanglement link between different ions. You first need to entangle these ions with the photons. How to get that? you just push these ions to one of these levels, and then push this up to some excited state with the laser beams. Then you just wait for this ion to decay back. And there are two decay channels. This is standard atomic physics. You have two decay channels. Ions either go here or go there. And the polarization, the photon polarization for these two decay channels are actually different. This is the horizontal. This is the vertical. So they have vertical. They have different polarizations. So if you look at this state, this is actually a kind of a spontaneous emission process, just go up and go down. And normally we think spontaneous emission process is just it's a process of noise. You know, the spontaneous emission is typically a bad thing for quantum information implementation. But here, on the other hand, you know, the noise, now you want to be something which is really coherent and really to be signal. And the signal and the noise essentially there's no essential difference. You know, something, if you cannot control it well, you call it noise. And normally spontaneous emission, we cannot control that. So it's a bad stuff for quantum information implementation. But on the other hand, if you can do something, this noise can become a signal. So here, the basic idea is just how to control this noise so that it can become give you some coherent state. The basic idea here is just to make a selection. So this is typically the spontaneous emission pattern. You know, when the atom sits there, it gives you photons. The photon can go to all the different directions. This is a so-called spontaneous emission pattern. And you can choose a particular direction to observe these photons. And along this direction, these two decay channels will both give photons in this direction. So they have some overlap there. And if you only observe photons in this direction, then the effective state for this system is just given by this state. This, if you look at this decay channel, it either go to this level, and it's correlated with a vertical polarized photon, or go to this level, it's correlated with a horizontally polarized photon. So you get this kind of entangled state. This is exactly an entangled state. And we have coherence between these two because nothing destroys this coherence. If you trace over the whole system, you lose the coherence. But if I only post select the photons in this direction, it's a perfectly entangled state. And that's how you observe this entanglement. And indeed, this has been observed in experiments pretty soon. We actually first proposed this idea. And about 3 months later, the Chris Merz group had demonstrated this. So it's a So compared with the trapped ion, compared with the cavity QED experiment, this is a much easier way to first realize so-called atom-photon entanglement. It's a perfect entanglement between a quantum memory and between a flying qubit. And that's a basic requirement if you want to realize any quantum network. So that's just a first step. So what's the next step to build a quantum network? Now you have atoms, you have atomic memory, which is entangled with a flying qubit. And you want to use this flying qubit to carry the information around and to entangle remote ions. So that's the idea is shown by this picture here. You just kind of double this experiment. Each ion gives a spontaneous emission photon. And you bring these two photons together to do an interference. To do an interference at this beam splitter, and then do a kind of photon count on these outcomes. And this is a kind of standard Hohmander interference. And this some simple algebra can show you that if you project these two photons in the entangled state, these two ions will also be projected into an entangled state, similar to the process called the entanglement swapping in quantum information. So the idea is simple. But to do these experiments, the difficulty is actually get squared, because for each photon, it give you a each ion it give you a photons. But these photons, you don't get this photon all the times, because many other photons go to the photon could go to other directions. So there's some success probability for that. And if you have two ions, this success probability just gets squared. So you need a much longer times to observe this. That's one of the difficulties. The other difficulty is that you want to get a pretty good interference here. If the ions have some vibration, that will cause you some problems. So you need to have a good interference. And actually, for experiments, it takes 3 years to realize that, and then you change the ions. Because the reason for that is to get a good interference, you have to use some fibers. And at the beginning, the ions is not a good ions. It gives out of void photons, which doesn't have a fiber. So anyway, but after 3 years, finally, one succeed to get this ion photon entanglement. This is our first experiment. Report in 2007 and get entangled fidelity about 97%. So this is the first experiment which finally entangled two remote ions. It's two ions in the different traps. They are separated by macroscopic distance, but still you can put them into an entangled state. So and actually one can do more than this. One cannot it's not stopping there. So we can also do so-called probabilistic quantum gates. The first experiment is on entanglement. You know, entanglement is just get you to a fixed state. This state doesn't carry any information. It's just a fixed EPR state. For quantum gate, we want to do some. It's a critical step for quantum computation. We want to do something beyond the entanglement. And for a quantum gate, we need to carry the initial state information. For instance, you need to use a different neighbor scheme here. You use these two neighbors to include a qubit. This is 0, this is 1. And at the beginning, you have a superposition of these two neighbors. And we want this superposition, these coefficients, still appear in the final state. That's an essential requirement for quantum gate. And you need to keep track of the initial state information. And that is important if you want to scale up these systems to do a four-functional quantum computer. So now you just push these ions still to the up neighbor. These are different neighbors. The 0 goes to the up neighbor, and the 1 goes to this neighbor here. And then you wait them to decay back. There are still two vertical decay channels. And you can see there's a one-to-one correspondence here. If the ions go here, it will follow this transition, this green transition. If the ions go to the up neighbor, it will follow this blue transition. So if you look at the state, if the ions initially in this zero neighbor, it will give you this green photon. And if you see in the one neighbor, it will give you this blue photons. So now you can see the column, the frequency of this photon will get entangled with the spin state of these atoms. And if you look at the transition from here to here, that's basically a standard as a CNOT gate, a quantum CNOT control NOT gate. The atom works as a control qubit, and the photon works as a target qubit. So this is a way to realize a probabilistic quantum gate using these ions and the photons. And you can further scale this setup. For instance, if you have two ions, you similarly bring two ions together, and you can then show that you can do a quantum gate on these two remote ions. And this is done in 2009. So after the entanglement of these two ions, then we changed the neighbor configuration. So we can do quantum gate. This is get this quantum gate operation is done in 2009 and get the first gate fidelity is about 90%. It's the exact formula with this kind of protocol here. And with now we can do a quantum gate on remote ions, and we can also do a entanglement. And if you combine these two things together, then you can apply them to realize some quantum information protocols. One of the protocols we want to do is just quantum teleportation. Of course, teleportation has been reported for ions, for photons. But for ions, it's, in particular for remote ions, it has not been done before. There are some experiments which do quantum teleportation for two local ions, to ions which is only have 3 micron distance. And this is the first experiment which can teleport a quantum state from a matter qubit to a remote matter qubit from one ion in a one trap to a different ion in a different trap. How to do that? You just need to combine entanglement protocol and a quantum gate protocol together. So on this side, you have ions which carry which have a state C0 C1, and you want to teleport this state to this side. So how you do that? You first do a quantum gate on this side. So these ions will get entangled with these photons. So information is transferred here. And on this side, you just do a standard entanglement between this ion and the photon. And then you bring these two photons together through this coincidence measurement. And then the state can be, then you can exactly show the state on this ion will be exactly the same one as this input state. So it's the protocol is a little bit different from the original quantum teleportation protocol. But the basic idea is they are similar. You need to use entanglement, and then you need to use coincidence measurements here. But here we use actually 4 qubits instead of 3 qubits, just easier for this kind of experimental realization. The classical communication actually gives this because we do a detection here. When you succeed, you need to this feedback to here, to this ion. And you need to do some single bit operation on these ions so that is exactly the same as this one. Otherwise, it may differ by a phase.
Yeah, for experimental realization, actually, there's always is ordinance for the quantum teleportation doesn't succeed all the times. So it's because we don't have because for teleportation, you need bare measurements. And for experiments so far, we don't have a perfect bare measurements. You just bare measurement with certain probabilities, some probabilities of success. That's actually similar to all the other teleportation experiments.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Is this the only limitation to scalability of this technique, or there is also a problem in addressing if you want to entangle more than two?
Yeah, that I will come to that. It's every step is probabilistic, so it's not straightforward for skinning. You know, if every step, every gate is probabilistic, yeah. If you have one gate is p, two gate p square, and then you have exponential skinning. And we can overcome that. I will come to that point.
But I was wondering whether this is the only problem or if there are also addressability.
Addressability is very good for this because
these are ions in different traps. So it's very easy to address different ions.
We will have a picture to show that there's actually more scalable version of this. If you have many ion traps, and they can be interfered by some integrated optics. So this is kind of entanglement experiment. Actually, in terms of technology, the
requirements is pretty similar to this remote quantum gate. So it's also, the experiment was also done in 2009, and get a fidelity, which is kind of basically similar to the fidelity for quantum gate, and is way above this quantum threshold. So now I want to mention some problem about the skinning here. You know, all the step here, all this quantum gate here is probabilistic. So now we do this for two ions. If you scale up these too many ions, is there any problems? The nature question is whether there's some exponential skinning problems. Actually, we can show that we can do much better than the kind of naive approach, which will give you an exponential skinning. Instead, we use some, even you have an early probabilistic gate, and the gate only success with a small probability, you can show that the overall the skinning, if you use some class state, the overall skinning is still pretty good. The resource required only scales linearly, almost linearly, with the number of qubits to the number of qubits. And the probability only enters here by this kind of simple polynomial function here. So even the probability is small, you still don't have this exponential skinning. So that's you use some ideas of some kind of divide and conquer method, and also some of this repetitive error correction, and finally you can achieve these kind of goals. The basic idea is something sort of similar to the linear optic quantum computation, but with some improvement, so you can get this kind of improved skinning here. And this is a kind of a cartoon picture to show the long-term goals. Actually, some experiments is moving towards this direction. You can imagine to have many ions in the different traps, and if you want to do a quantum gate onto arbitrary ions. You just shine laser on these ions, and then through some integrated optics. This is not just a fancy picture. It's actually some people do this. It's called flip mirrors. The Bill Nevs by this Joseph King, they developed this kind of technology. They have this flip mirrors. They can entangle arbitrary two ions, and when you get a detection here, then you get this. You do a quantum gate on these two ions, and similarly you can do on any other pair of ions. So it's indeed give a scalable setup for quantum network and also for computing. So this first idea, the quantum network approach based on this probabilistic ion photon coupling. It gives a simpler method to realize these quantum networks. And then I want to show some ideas on how to just increase the number of ions in a single trap. And before we mention this difficulty in a single trap, it sounds to be hard to put too many ions there. But actually, this picture is just kind of a joke. It's a kind of a cartoon picture. This is not a real problem. Because if this is a difficulty, you can easily come up with some ideas to solve that. How to solve that? You put it to a bigger trap. You put the trap bigger. So And actually, you don't need a big trap for this. So you can easily do some estimate. The distance between these ions is only about a few microns. And the typical trap size for experiments is about a few centimeters. So you can easily put like thousands of ions, tens of thousands of ions in the trap. So that doesn't give you the limitation. If you have a quantum computer with thousands of qubits, it should be pretty heavy already. So what's the real problems? This is actually not a real problem. What's the real problems? Indeed, there are some problems to put many ions in the trap. There are several problems. One problem is called the structure phase transition, the so-called chain instability. When you put so many ions here, this trap is called a harmonic trap. It's like a harmonic trap. And you can calculate what's the equilibrium position of the ions inside a harmonic trap. They don't form a regular lattice. It's like a homogeneous lattice. Instead, many ions, the distance for the ions at the central segment will be smaller. And if you put more ions, many ions will be squeezed to the central direction. And you can easily imagine if you just squeeze this ion crystal, some ions will be squeezed to the side. So you get this so-called zigzag transition. Some ions will be pushed away from this axis. But that still sounds to be OK. You still have a crystal there. So what's the problems? This problem is related to the power trap. Power trap is kind of special. Only when you put the ions along this linear chain, you can do quantum computing. As soon as these ions are pushed away from this axis, there will be a lot of noise, so-called micromotion noise. So there's a many noise process, which forbids you to do any quantum gates. So that's one of the problems. The other problem is you also need to do so-called the cooling. The cooling of the ions is a problem. You know, normally the ions, atoms, they always move. They don't sit there. So you need to do some laser cooling. And for laser cooling, you need to push all these so-called photomoles to the ground state. But for there's a typical technique which is called sideband cooling. Sideband cooling means you need to push all these photomoles to the ground states. The photomoles just means the oscillation patterns of these ion crystals. You need to put everything to the ground state. That's something difficult to achieve when you have many ions. There's some other question, like this is related to the quantum gates. When you have many photomoles, it becomes harder to do quantum gates. There are many things. There are many modes to control here. So in 2009, we came up with some ideas to overcome these problems just to make it more scalable. First, we need to, instead of using the conventional harmonic traps, we use the unharmonic traps to change the trap design so that even you put many ions in the crystal, they don't suffer this kind of quantum phase transition, the structure phase transition there. And secondly, you also use a different photomoles, so-called the transfer photomoles. And I will explain this idea later. So that with that photomoles, you can eliminate the requirement of sideband cooling. And also, you need to do kind of a more controlled quantum gates. So first, let's look at why we need a uniform ion trap. And the ions just have a cooling interaction between each other. And you might be wondering, what leads to this kind of structure phase transition? If you have a uniform ion crystal, you can see even you have a cooling interaction between all these ions. Actually, this ion will not be pushed aside. This is a kind of stable system. It becomes unstable only because the ions, when in the harmonic trap, the ions is more has a smaller spacing in the center. So the basic idea is that we want to realize this kind of uniform trap. So what we need to this kind of uniform trap, then you can calculate the required potential. The potential, it turns out that the potential takes this shape. It's a kind of a flat bottom potential. You need kind of this shape. And this potential is not so difficult to achieve experimentally. This is a typical experimental setup with a few segments. And you just need to do a bit change to this segment to get this flat the flat bottom potentials. You add two segments, two electrodes on both sides, and you try to control the voltage here. And you can show that the potential it takes quadratic forms. And you try to optimize these parameters. Then this is not exactly a flat bottom potential as we required, but it's pretty close. And if you look at the ion distribution inside such a potential. It takes this shape, this ion position. It's almost homogeneous for all these ions. This is for 120 ions. So for the middle 100 ions, it's almost homogeneous. There's only some problems at the edge. But for the edge, you can just use the middle segments to do the computation. So this kind of the cartoon picture for a large scale quantum computing. You use the middle segments of ions to do quantum computing. They have a homogeneous spacing. And you use the edge segments to do some cooling here. And that gives you a scalable setup here. And then how about the laser cooling? Before we show you that we need to cool all these photomoles, that's called sideband cooling, which is difficult for ions because when the photomoles just increase with the number of ions, if you have more ions, the oscillation pattern, there will be more oscillation patterns. And if you want to cool each of them, it's difficult. And instead, the Doppler cooling is much easier. Doppler cooling is a standard cooling method, which doesn't depend on the number of ions. If you have one ion or have millions of ions, the cooling strategy, the cooling method work exactly the same. So here we want just use the Doppler cooling because that's easily scalable. And for Doppler cooling, for some previous quantum gates, the Doppler cooling is not fine because if you use a quantum, if you use the photomoles along this direction to assist this quantum gates, you can show this the ions have too much motion along this direction. This is a trap. You can imagine the trap along this direction is much stronger, and along this direction is much weaker. So that when you have a weaker trap, the ions will have more oscillation, and along this direction is a much stronger trap, the ion will have much smaller oscillation. So under the same temperature, this direction is much more stable, and this direction is much unstable. So we try to use the oscillation pattern along this vertical direction to assist the interaction between different ions, and they use that transfer photomoles to do quantum gates. So that's an idea proposed to overcome these problems. But for transfer photomoles, there are some difficult, there's some other difficulty. You might be wondering, if the transfer photomoles is good, why people have not tried that before? There's a question, there's a problem there. Because for the transfer photomoles, all the moles are kind of packed together. This is a picture for this is a frequency for different moles. This is for the longitudinal moles, for the axial moles. Their frequency are kind of well separated, but for the transfer moles, the frequency are almost the same. And when you do the quantum gate, if you look at the design of a quantum gate, they need to use one particular photon mole to assist the interaction. If you have all the photon moles get evolved, then the process gets more complicated. So that's a problem before why people use the longitudinal mode, because they want to have this separate addressing of an individual mode. And this is the problem gets more serious when you have many ions. So to overcome that problems, we need to redesign a quantum gate. And the quantum gate actually gets somewhat more complicated, but still this turns out to be a controllable problem. We try to use some quantum control technology combine quantum control technology with the design of quantum gates. So we need to introduce some more parameters. Even the gate evolves all the photon oscillations, you can still get a high fidelity quantum gate. The idea here is you need to introduce more control parameters. If you just have one segment of laser, then it's hard to do quantum gate in that case, because many photon modes get evolved, and you need to get every photon mode to be disentangled with a spin state after gate. That's a difficult task. But if you have, if you introduce more control parameters, for instance, for a laser, you can chop the laser with several segments. And this can be done experimentally. It's pretty routine experiments. And with that, you can introduce several control parameters. Then you can try to optimize the gate fidelity. This becomes a standard control problem. You solve the, you find the gate fidelity as a function of this of these ratios, then you optimize these problems. And it turns out that if you introduce these control parameters, then the gate fidelity can still become pretty good. This shows a typical fidelity. This is actually the infidelity, one minus fidelity, as a function of the frequency of the driving laser. You can see with the appropriate frequency, the gate infidelity is pretty small. It's normally below 10 to minus 4. So it's a So even you get all the formals evolved when you have this large setup, use a transfer formals, when you get many formals evolved, the theoretic problem still becomes solvable. You can use this control technology just to get a high fidelity quantum gate. So that's a theoretic ideas. There's some experiments just use these ideas to. These are first experiments which realized a quantum gate using the transfer formals in 2009. So this report for two ions and three ions. The fidelity is actually is pretty good. It's comparable with quantum gates using the longitudinal modes. But this is just the first experiment. Now actually people can do things somewhat better than these numbers now. And the main advantage, as we mentioned before, is that with this transfer mode, it will be more scalable. This is for three ions, but if you have more ions, then the thermal motion for the ions just increase if you use a axial mode. But with the transfer mode, everything will still be the same. So then when you have many ions, it's much better to use this transfer mode quantum gate. So that's a kind of a brief review of some ideas to get a more scalable quantum computation with the trapped ion systems. So basically, it's a combination of two ideas. First, we want to increase the number of ions in a single trap as much as we can, as much as possible. So we try to push that. And in the music team, in this big team now, supported by this United States, we want to have about 100, eventually push this to 100 ions in a single trap. And then for different traps, you can try to connect them with these photonic networks, with these probabilistic photonic networks. And with that, you can further increase the number of ions in the trap. So this, if you combine this thing together, at least it gives you kind of a scalable architecture for this quantum, for this trapped ion quantum computing. So now I want to mention some other ideas still related to trapped ions, but for a different application for quantum simulation. So the idea here is to try to understand some many-body physics with this quantum platforms. And this is kind of an analog simulation. If you have a quantum computer, of course, you know, we can simulate any other quantum systems. That's more kind of like a digital simulation. You have a quantum computer, you do gate by gate, and you simulate the dynamics there. And that's one approach. Of course, that approach, you need to have a quantum computer. But so far, we don't have a quantum computer yet. So instead, many experimental groups do some different approach. That's an analog quantum simulation. For that, you just have a larger systems. And you try to use this system to realize some Hamiltonians. And then you push the system to the ground state of this Hamiltonian. You can use some adiabatic passage to do that, or you just directly cool the systems. And then you can find the ground state of this Hamiltonian. So for that kind of analog simulation, it's not universal. Instead, it's not universal means you don't realize any Hamiltonian. But on the other hand, you can realize some pretty interesting stuff. You can simulate Hubble model, for instance, and you can simulate some frustrated quantum magnetic models. So there are many interesting models can be attracted by this kind of ideas. So that's kind of analog quantum simulation. So this is just some examples. You want to simulate Hubble model to understand some physics related to high TC and some other strongly correlated systems. And you also want to understand some frustrated magnetic models. And for quantum simulation, there's also different approach to that using different experimental systems. One popular experimental system is outcooled atoms, some atoms at a very low temperature. It's a very clean systems, and it's a many-body systems. And in particular, if you put that into an optical lattice, you can use that to simulate both Hubble model. This is the first paper by Srak Zonas group, which really motivates this stimulates all the following work in this field. And we can also use that to simulate some frustrated quantum magnetic models, even to realize pretty exotic magnetic models. And some experiments are working in that direction. And we can, now there are also many experiments working on fermions. And here I want to show that a similar idea, similar kind of simulation can also be done with trapped ion systems. So for trapped ion systems, you don't have bosons, fermions, because ions are at fixed positions. They don't move around. So the statistics is not relevant. But instead, you just use that to simulate some spin systems. For instance, we can try to simulate this so-called the it's kind of an extension of the Ising Hamiltonian. And you know, the Ising Hamiltonian is one of the typical models. It's one of the simple models when we teach a quantum phase transition, teach quantum many-body physics. And if you just have a nearest neighbor interaction here, this model is, has been well understood already. It's a, there's a typical phase transition there. But on the other hand, for this traveled ion system, we can control this interaction coefficients. This interaction can be controlled by different laser beams, different laser frequencies. And actually, we can realize arbitrary coupling between these different ions. That's one of our recent work just show how to control this coefficient. So if you have a nearest neighbor, this model is understood. On the other hand, if you have arbitrary coupling here, this model gets actually pretty very complicated. Even without this magnetic field, if you have arbitrary coupling here, it has been proven before that this is the NP complete problems if you want to solve the ground state. So the model also looks pretty simple. It interplays between a simple limit where people have understood the many-body physics and a very complicated limit where the problem is NP complete and the problem, the difficulty there is even beyond the quantum computer. So with this, with that we can, so with this trapped ions, one can still do some pretty interesting here. And this is the first experimental attempt along this direction. For trapped ions, it's a little bit different from crude atoms. Crude atoms normally people start with very large systems with like thousands of millions of atoms. And you go up, but you don't have much control there. So you go from top to down. And here, this is the kind of a bottom-up approach. For trapped ions, you don't have many ions now in the crystal. But on the other hand, you have a very good control on all the experimental knobs. You can well control the interaction here. For instance, you can control all these different interactions. So this is the first experiment that actually just started with three ions. Of course, three ions is hard to talk about any many-body physics. But still, you can see some picture, some signal there. So this is the first experiment just to show for three ions, you want to get some frustrated interaction, and you want to get how these order parameters. You can still define these order parameters. There are several. If you scale system up, there we can see there are several phase transitions. But we can just look at how this phase, the signature phase transition for these small systems. You can see how this order parameter changes. And this is the experimental figure. It looks almost the same as the theory predicts. And the purpose here, of course, is not to start to stop with this three ion system. That's not very interesting. But the thing here is the purpose here is to show that the system indeed works as you expect. So you can do some good comparison between theory and experiments. And the second, you can well control these systems. You can really realize frustration in your Hamiltonian. You can control the frustration in your Hamiltonian. And it's a very controllable systems. And if everything works as you expect, then you try to scale up these systems. So this is the more recent experimental data. You can see for two ions, this is a picture. It's almost a very smooth transition. And now if you look at nine ions, it's still a pretty small system, but at least you can see some picture. It looks like a transition picture now. It's a transition now. And actually, you don't need too many ions to realize a transition. Normally, if you want to see a many-body phase transition, you need at least 100 or thousands of ions. That's not always true. It's because the sharpness of a phase transition, typically the sharpness of phase transition scales with the particle number by some polynomial scalings. So in that case, you need at least hundreds of particles to see a sharp transition. Here instead, this is a ion system with a pretty long-range interaction. And some phase transition is pretty unique here. You can see this transition. This is only for nine ions. You can exactly calculate all the ground states. And if you see this transition, it's very sharp. This is kind of a zoomed-in picture. You almost don't see any boundary here. All the parameters change directly from this one to this one, from one to minus one. So this corresponds to a ferromagnetic phase. All the spins of the ions pointing to the same direction. And this corresponds to a different phase, where half of the spins pointing up, half of the spins pointing down, and it's called a king phase. It breaks some symmetry there. So the reason to see a very sharp transition for these small systems is because there are some unusual skinning here. So although normally the phase transition, the sharpness of phase transition scales polynomial for this phase transition, actually, it has an exponential scaling. If you can look at the, sorry, cannot see this picture here. So there's some way to characterize this sharpness of this phase transition. You can use some energy gaps, and we can show these energy gaps get a good exponential scaling with the number of ions. It's given by this kind of exponential law. And this scaling works pretty well. You know, it's, you see 5 ions, 7 ions, 9 ions, it always will fit by this kind of scaling law. So indeed, there's a, for these systems, we can see pretty sharp phase transition, even with the pretty small scale experimental systems. And now the experiments, Chris Morris group, try to observe this kind of phase transition. It's a, it should be, if one can observe that, it should be a pretty sharp phase transition already in a few ion systems. So that's a kind of the scientific part for this talk. So it's basically on some progress of the trapped ion systems, and then we can use that for both quantum computation and also for quantum simulation. And for both purposes, we want to scale up these systems so that we can simulate and solve non-trivial problems. And the, in the last few minutes, I just want to kind of briefly mention the recent activities at the Tsinghua University to try to establish a center for quantum information. Want to, the final goal, this actually was just happening last year. It's only 1 year old. But the goal is similar to the I could see here, we want to build a world-class research center for quantum information there. And to try to combine, there's some big support from the Chinese government. So we want to, for each of PI, we want to provide pretty generous support with a good research culture. And the center is also pretty international. Actually, the faculty right now is more than half of that of non-Chinese origin. And the center is also pretty interdisciplinary. We want to try to encourage the interaction between computer science and the physics. And the, also, there are both theory and experiments. They are kind of well integrated with each other. So I guess all these features is kind of common for all the successful research centers. But on the other hand, this is pretty unique for in China. I think normally the Chinese system is pretty different. And here we try to kind of model the successful Western systems. So all this actually starts with, of course, the NEO is the one who is behind this. I guess many of you probably know NEO. He's a famous computer scientist. He's a winner of this Turing Award. And he's a professor in Princeton University for many years. And in 2004, he returned to China and created a, first is a kind of an institute for theoretical computer science. And last year, he significantly expanded this effort. And now it's called the Institute for Interdisciplinary Information Science. And under this institute, there are several centers. So quantum information, the Center for Quantum Information is one of them. So he's the one who is behind this kind of the institute. Amy Wong is in the audience. She's a deputy dean there. And you can talk with her for more details about this institute. And these are the people at the last year who tried to, when the institute was just established 1 year ago. And these are several directions we are pushing at that time. We want to, this some experimental programs. So we have a good, very good postdoc, Kiwon Kim. He's a postdoc from Chris Morris group, and he joined this Tsinghua University as a faculty there. And he's responsible for this trapped ion quantum computation. And we also built some quantum network programs, try to get the photonic network as a telecom wavelength. And then we want to build some interface between these two, some atom-photon quantum interface. So these are actually the three experimental programs started last year. And we certainly want to have more experimental programs. But this depends on the recruitment. So we are actually looking for people. So this is the depth there. So for some people from Tsinghua University, people can probably can recognize this. This is not a quantum lab at all before. It's a, at the beginning, it's kind of a dining hall. Several years ago, it's a dining hall. And then 1 year ago, this is a place to play the bowling ball. So it's a place for sport. And last year, Andy want to get this quantum center, so we need a quantum layer. So we just grab this place, and now it's a kind of becomes a lab space for a quantum center now. And the renovation in that it goes pretty fast. So after half year, at least we can show some stuff now. It looks like an experiment now. So we have some optic experiments, and also this is a half year ago. So we just have some optic experiments going on there. And now we have some also trapped ion set up now. And this is some recent experimental result. I think the optical experiments move very fast. So after three months, we get the entanglement, and we can use that to demonstrate some nice quantum game protocols. So this is one of the publications recently from this photonic setups. So we basically use this kind of entangled state to realize some non-trivial quantum games. It's a zero-sum quantum games, and we want to show that with the entanglement, you can help the quantum player. So with this kind of entanglement, this picture which confirms this entanglement, and this picture just shows if you have a quantum player which have this entanglement, then the winning chance for this player can increase from 50% to 100% using this kind of quantum protocol. So that's something going on with this lab now. And this is the kind of recent data for the trapped ions. This after about half a year, they finally can trap a few ions now. I don't know whether you can see that. Actually, there are six ions there. So we get six ions in this trap. So that's an important first step. Fortunately, all these centers, of course, depending on what the people we can bring to this center. And fortunately, we have attracted some brilliant people joining this center. And I guess all the people know the face here. And many people are here actually from PI, from IQC. And all these people bring new exciting directions to this center. This junior is a good expert on quantum foundation and quantum information and inertia. On quantum information many-body physics, and Xun Feng on the quantum cryptography. And Hunchen Jiang, he's a postdoc at KITP before. He's a KITP at UC Santa Barbara. And he's a very good theorist on this many-body, he's a many-body theorist on, in particular, numeric physics. So he also brings some new expertise there. So we are very fortunate that there are new people joining this institute, and we are still actively looking for people. It's actively recruiting people to, and we also want to build some visitor programs with all the other centers and to stimulate this kind of discussion. So it's that's one of our purpose to visit here, and we discuss about some of these interactions. So it's we welcome all the visitors. If you have time to stop by in China, just stop by to look at this center. And I think the same scale there will change very fast. So they will have a pretty rapid growth. And also at Tsinghua University, there are very good students. The students are very motivated. And that's one of the strengths. If you look at in the long run, the students is very important. With their appropriate training, I think they can become very good researchers. Now we try to get people from other well-established institute. But later, when with the training of these students, I think the flow of these trained people will become two ways. We will also export some very good people from this center there. So that's basically my talk. Thank you for your attention.
We have time for some questions. Questions?
One about the technical, but when you explained about the ion trap that you want to have this kind of like flat potential.
Yeah.
Can you repeat again, why is that important? Because I thought the most important part is actually the mode structure.
The mode is one problem. The flat potential is just, if you just want to have many ions in the trap. So the normal trap is just this three-segment trap. That gives you a kind of harmonic potential. Yeah. And with the harmonic potential, the ion spacing is always this. When you put more ions there,
yes,
the ions is try to squeeze to the center. And then you will have zigzag problems. You try to squeeze a chain, and then these ions will be pushed around.
Oh.
And that gives you a lot of noise because it needs to be a linear ion trap. Otherwise,
so it's a pure stability.
Yeah, pure stability problem.
1D trap is
yeah. We need to have a 1D trap because it's the only 1D power trap has a good noise properties.
But
when the ions are pushed away, there's many noise here. You cannot do quantum gain.
So that's more the important stuff rather than to say that.
Yeah, that's more than need to quantum gain. That's just we need to have a platform. We need to have this experimental platform with many ions. Then you need to have this. Yeah.
So making the ion traps talk to each other is really important for scalability.
Yeah.
And you have this photon mechanism.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's other mechanisms. Like, is it possible to move the ion traps around mechanically so that they will talk to each other locally and then
That's of course not easy. If you look at the original ion shuttling idea, it's basically along that kind of approach. So you basically try to mechanically move these ions around to get B. And how to move ions around? Then you need to get, basically you need to apply some appropriate potentials to push these ions. So then you need to, these ions, this trap need to be break into many, many segments. So that you can apply different potentials to move these ions. And the distance between these ions is pretty small. It's typically only a few microns. So if you want to separate these ions and move them around, all these need to be only about 10 micron distance. So the trap design becomes very difficult. So that's one of the challenges. Of course, there are big experimental efforts along that direction, and there's a lot of investment in that direction. But on the other hand, it's very challenging experiments.
More questions?
And the mechanical movement, of course, is one way to get this quantum computation in a single pair. But if you want to have a quantum network, actually photons essentially is still always needed. Because for mechanical movement, you cannot move ions to a larger distance. Normally, you only move around a few centimeters.
I was thinking you move the whole trap, so you have a trap.
That's the problem. Right?
And then you have another trap here, and you move them close to each other.
Yeah.
So this trap maybe has 20 ions, and this one has 20 ions.
Yeah.
You move them close, and then separate them.
That's a difficult. Of course, some is possible because I just carry this ion trap to that place
right.
and put them together. The reason it's difficult because first the ion, the lifetime is pretty short.
How long is
it? So ions has a record of lifetimes, so 1 second.
One second.
The 1 second, of course, you push them together, it sounds to be okay. But actually, it's not that easy. Because for ion traps, if you want to trap a few ions here, the inequality is like this way. The inequality is much, much bigger than these ions. So you cannot just put this like two inequalities together, so ions doesn't talk with each other at all. Because this ion is somewhere here. You need to see this inequality in terms of size, it's much bigger than this ion crystal. This is only a few microns. This is typically about a few centimeters.
Right.
Yeah.
More questions? No? So let's thank Luming again.
Okay.